Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another program in our continuing coverage of the Casey Anthony trial. Joining me in the studio is my wife, Jan. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Simon. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the program.
We also have an illustrious panel from the City of Angels. We have prominent attorney Manny Barling. Manny, welcome.
Welcome. It's nice to talk to you on a Sunday.
By the way, Manny, completely off topic, have you filed your Freedom of Information request to find out what LA's emergency plan is in case of an unexpected zombie invasion?
Well, no, not really, because I can't differentiate which kind of zombies to ask. And when you read that little show yesterday, I got off the show and I said, well, which kind of zombies? Is it the bloodthirsty ones? It's the ones that kidnap your wife? I mean, which ones are they?
Well, yeah, I mean, you could, of course, detail it in your request.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Okay, for our listeners, it was an absolutely stupid news article out of the UK that Manny and I discussed on air yesterday. And someone actually did file a Freedom of Request or Freedom of Information Act request asking about a particular city's plans in the case of an unexpected zombie invasion. Let's move on. Enough of zombies. From Upper New York, we have the crime doctor himself, Denny Griffin. Denny, welcome.
Good afternoon, Simon and everybody. Pleasure to be with you.
And how is your summer vacation going?
The vacation's going good, actually, but I just started a job. I started last Tuesday.
Oh, good Lord.
I'm
Denny
now
working for a living? That will never catch on.
I'm now a private investigator for the summer.
Whoa.
Oh, no.
Lock up the women and children immediately.
And from Ground Zero, Orlando, Florida, we're joined by Orlando Magazine journalist Dave Neckel. Dave, welcome to the program.
Good morning, good morning. Good afternoon, Simon, everyone. I guess it's 5 o'clock somewhere, isn't it?
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
Is there any truth in the rumor that the University of Florida has asked you to teach a course on anatomical sketching?
Yeah, you know, they have these models that come in. I've yet to meet one, but they're young, they're pretty, and they don't mind taking their clothes off.
Oh, gee.
More about the anatomical sketching later.
Yes.
And of course, we have our good friend, bail bondsman William Cobra Storbs with us. Cobra, welcome.
Hey, brother, how you doing? Hey, Simon, you'll never believe it, brother, man. I mean, it don't snow in Florida unless Cocaine Cowboys are running. But about 5 minutes ago, probably 15 minutes, because this lasted for a good solid 10 minutes, dude, we have got ice 2 inches thick on the roof. It hailed, and I ain't never in my life sleet. I've seen sleet, but I ain't never seen no hail. And my girl was saying, what's going on? I said, I think it's the end of the earth. I think the Lord's covered or something. I ain't never seen nothing like this. Brother, chunks of ice the size of golf balls bouncing off of stuff, all my beautiful little plants getting beat to hell and back. But, man, I'll tell you what, it scared the hell out of me because I ain't never seen nothing like that before in my life. And I'm from a northern state to see snow, but I ain't never seen no ice the size of golf balls bouncing off. I'm glad my truck's in the shop.
They can do some damage.
You didn't know if they left it out last night in the... Oh, that was a shame.
If they did, guess what? It's on them.
As always, our chat room is open, and we do invite listeners to ask their questions in there. We also ask that you all play nicely with each other. Okay, on with the program. It was only about an hour ago that we started to get some news alerts of some breaking news. It started off with Geraldo. Apparently on his program last night, he thought it would be a great idea to do exactly what Judge Perry had asked the press not to do, publish the animation that one of the forensic experts put on, showing the skull morphing into Kaylee Anthony's picture. A few minutes after that, we got word that that well-known and well-known and well-respected website, The Examiner, had decided to publish pictures of all of the bones. Dave, I'm going to start with you. You were in the courtroom when Judge Perry gave pretty clear instructions to the press. Thou shalt not do this. What the hell happened?
Well, here's the what really happened initially was that a Sentinel photographer, he took pictures of the monitors when the bones and stuff were being shown. And then he posted them. See, we all have access. If you're in the media, you have access to a password site, Flickr site, where we can download and publish images taken inside the courtroom, outside, whatever. The Sentinel and True TV takes images of, we can use them. But the problem is, a lot of these pictures that went up were not supposed to be put up to begin with. So the first one that I noticed, I got a phone call Friday night from a woman who said they were up at the Kaylee Daily, some of these pictures. So I guess Perry had asked that some of those pictures be removed. I think one may have depicted the skull. And but there's now one, whatever. There's one floating around of the entire skeleton. The problem is, if you look at it, you'll see that it's kind of distorted. It was taken off the monitor by the Sentinel photographer.
The skull itself was kind of blurred out on the one that the examiner's got. She's got the body, you know, the skull, the skeleton laid out, and it's the skull that's blurred out. Everything else you can see plain.
Well, none of the bones were supposed to be published.
Well, they shouldn't have been.
No. And the judge did ask for that. So, you know, I think that anybody, you know, even if I would have had access to them, I never would have published them on my site, ever.
Right.
So, you know, the whole thing surprises me that there's that shock value, that they want to be the first one so they can, what, get hits, get, you know, revenue from it or something. I mean, it was just a low thing to do.
Off air, Jan and I were talking. You know, we were looking at these photos, and she said, you know, I'll paraphrase it. If you publish, I'll kill you.
getting back to the sketches that I did in the courtroom, and I thought that, you know, I even wondered about that, but that was nothing compared to what's going on now. I mean, I didn't have any problem publishing. That wasn't my intent when I first did those drawings. it was an afterthought because I wanted to keep them for my own records. But you know, there's nothing wrong. You always have artists in a courtroom. Not in this trial, but instead we have photographers. But some of those media outlets really stepped over the line.
Many. Do you think that there's going to be hell to pay tomorrow when you know, Judge Perry gets behind the desk?
Well, of course. Whether he likes it or not, he's got to. He's got to stand up for the integrity of the system. So, of course, he's going to pound on his chest and act like a judge. And he should. But then again, the minute you do this, you have to know this is going to be the result. I mean, you know, did anybody really believe that anyone in the press would exercise self-restraint, let alone our dear friend Geraldo, who can't spell the word self-restraint? So that's the bottom line. I mean, you know, I met Geraldo a number of times in the 70s when his name was still Jerry, and when minority jobs became available, he suddenly became Geraldo, and we went, who's he? And since then, he has spent his whole life just trying to outdo everybody and getting the max ultimate piece of evidence out there, and this is the result when you do that.
Well, I seem to remember Geraldo managing to get himself unembedded in Iraq by, you know, publishing details that he absolutely should not have been publishing.
Well, that's his M.O. And by the way, you know, it sounds like he has an utter disregard for what's going on. What he has an utter disregard for are the concepts that the press should be refused any information. Whether you agree with him or not, that's basically what his position is, and I don't happen to agree with him. And it's not so much because I'm so worried about safeguarding individual rights, because I think her rights have been sort of misused for a long period of time. So at the end of the day, the real issue is the orderly conduct of a trial and preventing appeal. And unlike Geraldo, who said this case is going to be, going one on appeal because of this, I don't agree. I just think there's too many other pieces of information out there, and I don't think this is prejudicial, especially with a sequestered jury, because they would have to prove the jury saw these,
right,
and they affected them, but they already saw them in court, right?
Yeah.
Correct. Denny, do you have any thoughts?
That's a good question.
Related to this case, yes. I'm kind of anxious to see the judge tomorrow. I do just want to see how he handles this. I agree with Manny that he's pretty much obliged to do something here. He can't just ignore it. He's got to address the issue. And, if you're trusting to the press, I believe, to police themselves or show restraint and that kind of thing, I think you're whistling Dixie.
Yeah. Okay, the judge has made it abundantly clear that he will not put up with any nonsense from the press. I mean, Dave, you've heard the lectures. Is it possible that, you know, he might come down with an iron fist? And
I don't know. I mean, I know what you're asking, but the thing is, this started on Friday, and Saturday it was business as usual. And I believe what I heard was that someone related to the court said something to the Kaley Daily, and they removed at least one picture. So that's what I heard. I don't know that to be true, because when I found what was up there, I didn't see a skull. And then someone later told me that skull was removed. So, but the judge didn't say anything Saturday morning. So that kind of surprised me. And he didn't restrict anyone.
Okay, but is it conceivable that tomorrow he might just yank Fox's media credential?
Absolutely.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Well, they're right in front of me, so I'll find out tomorrow.
We're going to have an eyewitness report, I see.
Yeah, and they're both nice women. I mean, they're the ones. Geraldo came one day, and I did meet him. But that was the first day. And he was nice. I mean, he was a regular guy, you know. He wasn't too stuck on himself or anything. But that was the only day. And in the meantime, the seats are generally filled with producers when there's no, personality there. And it's been the same two women in the seats upstairs. So, which I said, they're right in front of me. They're actually the front row, and I'm in the third row. So, in the top. But I've got some really good company up there. But I'll find out tomorrow morning, Simon. I'll let you know maybe during a morning break if they're still there or not.
Oh, I'm pretty certain that just watching the opening of tomorrow's excursion will reveal exactly how grumpy Perry is. Cobra, do you think they're going to he's going to yank some credentials over this?
Here's what I think. One, Geraldo got in some major trouble up in Satsuma. In fact, they threatened him with arrest and sent him packing along his way. He took off out of town. And I think that very possibly the judge will issue some type of sanction against Fox. Or he has it in full power to find out who did it and probably just put him in jail for a little bit. But this is twice now I disagreed with the judge. I disagreed with the judge when he allowed the Anthony family to be in the courtroom, and I disagreed with the judge when he said do not post these pictures. I think the public, we all, have a right to see these pictures because it refutes one major story that hasn't came out yet. And that is, if you go back to the 911 call or the call that was based to Crump's employer, he said, hey, I was walking out here, Suburban Drive, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, but I'll get to the point. And he says, and I come up on this bag and I kicked it and the skull rolled out. Well, that's impossible. Number one, that skull was buried up to its eye sockets in the muck. Number two, animals had shred these remains out of these bags. So he didn't kick no bag and no skull ran out of it. And I think we as a public need to, if you're going to let a news story like that go out there, this refutes exactly what Crump said. And it actually, if you put the two of them together, it kind of goes to Baez's opening statement that Crump was the one moving the body around. Now, whether I believe all that or not, it sure does play into the facts that we've learned this week. And now that the pictures are out there, that skull did not roll out of no bag.
Dave, do you have any theories on Cobra's theory?
It's not a theory. It's a fact. That shows you two news facts.
Well, I think that, I grew up in a town called Flemington, New Jersey, and that was home to the Lindbergh kidnapping. And they didn't want to publish pictures of the baby skeleton. But you know what? They eventually were published and none the wiser. You know, in the end, it's a question of, we know that the remains of Kaylee were skeletonized, okay? We know that she was found in the woods. We know so much about it that I don't think there's as much shock value when the images are released. Do I think it was right of the news media to do that? Some in the news media. No, of course not. Because that's kind of like, I guess, if George and Cindy left the courtroom because they didn't want to view them, maybe they never saw the photos to begin with, okay? Now they're subjected to them when they turn on the TV or read the newspaper or whatever. They're almost forced into seeing those images. So I think there's, you're doing something disrespectful there.
I want to see Bin Laden's picture. That's the one I want to see. I don't care about the rest of this. I want to see Bin Laden's picture now.
Yeah.
Okay, Manny, I have a question for you, and I it concerns the Geraldo tape that was played. It turns out that the picture that Dr. Warren, I think his name is, used, actually showed Kaylee and Casey. I thought it was probably pretty poor taste to do that. Why on earth didn't the defense, you know, object to having Casey's image in the photograph?
That's the one that I find interesting, because to me that is really the pivotal photo, because you know, the other photo is an issue of respect. This photo carries some kind of interpretive meaning, and that interpretive meaning is the one that's more dangerous to the trial than anything else. I don't think that these photos are dangerous to her case. I think they're just offensive for the general public, and I think the judge's intent was to reduce the number of people that were exposed to this image, and his concern that this image was, you know, something that the American public could have easily done without in their life, and I happen to agree with him for that matter. I'm not a big advocate of showing these photos because they don't help the case. They're not really good for anybody over breakfast. Some people get nightmares over them, and I just don't know that it's the most productive thing in our country to do. But be that as it may, I also don't consider them particularly dangerous to anything. But when you start showing the defendant in the same photo, and that defendant may have a look on their face, which it appeared she did because she appeared to be smiling, that in some way could be interpreted as something else, and I think that's dangerous.
He did object in the form of he asked for a mistrial, if I'm not mistaken, when that picture was viewed.
Well, I'm sure he did, but that's not the same as making a formal motion to object.
Right.
And since I've looked at a fair amount of the trial, I didn't have time to watch it during the week. I did not see that anywhere, and that to me is a bigger issue. So barring the fact that he failed to make a formal motion to withdraw, then I have to ask myself whether making a motion to dismiss is adequate or a motion for mistrial. I don't think it is.
Okay, I'm not a lawyer, but a term that I keep hearing is, you know, prejudicial versus probative value, and that did look kind of prejudicial.
Well, why didn't he ask to have Casey's picture blocked out of it? If that was his problem. But all he did was stood up and said that he, you know, wanted a mistrial instead of saying that.
Well, that's back to my original comment that Simon actually printed in my erstwhile email to him about inviting error, and that's the art of allowing someone to make a mistake and then using it later to win on appeal when you can't win on trial. So I think some of what's going on with him is a selective use of that process, trying to gain an advantage at a later date, because I don't think Baez believes for one millisecond he's going to win this trial.
Oh, quite the contrary, Manny. Quite the contrary.
Do you really believe that a defense attorney goes to bed at night in this kind of case thinking he's going to win?
The state cannot say how the child died, number one. They can't say who really killed the child. I mean, you know, I was going to a little later and tell you this straight up. I mean, it's similar to the O.J. Simpson trial. This is, you know, everybody, even my girlfriend, everybody's been on my case. Cobra, it sounds like you believe the girl, this, that, and the other. Listen, I believe that O.J. Simpson killed two people. However, I believe that the justice system, whether I drink too much Kool-Aid or not, is supposed to work. The minute that they took O.J. Simpson's blood back to the scene, mistrial done, he's innocent, let him walk. Now, 13 years later, justice was served. And if it takes 13 years from now for Haley or Casey to get justice served, great. But if you're going to deal with this case emotionally, that's one thing. If you're going to deal it on the fact side of it, that's another. And on the fact side of it, the most that is going to happen to this girl is bad checks, maybe some child abuse, maybe lying to law enforcement. But first degree murder, out the window. Attempted homicide, out the window. It's gone. Both of them are gone. They can't prove either one of those. The other ones, yeah, but you probably do 5 to 10 years in prison for those crimes. That's it. And
well,
I don't believe
Scott Peterson.
Scott Peterson, I figured he killed it, and I was too damn emotional in that one, and he got what he got. But, you know, that's where I didn't hold the prosecution to their form. And the only reason I did with O.J., I mean, I was the bondsman on the second go-around with O.J. anyway, so it was kind of like a just dessert. And I got a slight involvement in this case representing, you know, Richard Grun and his son Jesse. So I have some emotional tie to it, but when I take the emotion out of it and just deal with the facts of it, the state is having a very difficult time. And, you know, I used to say Baez was Mr. Bozo, but he has brought some pressure to bear on, especially the FBI agents and different things. And, yes, he is setting up for in case the state accidentally proves their case to this jury, which at this point they haven't. Now, emotionally, I think, just like somebody else said, y'all take the girl out, beat her brains in, and get the rest of them and beat them up too, and, you know, put them all into like injection. But that's emotional. If you talk about our justice system, that's not, they haven't proven anything yet. They just going around in circles.
Oh, okay. Dave, do you think that the animation used by Dr. Warren had any probative value, or was it just a highly prejudicial piece of evidence?
Well, you know, at first I thought that he wasn't going to let it in, but he did. So I think, you know, it's funny with a jury. You can look at a jury, or a jury can look at evidence different ways. You can look at this and say, okay, look at the evidence that preceded it. And then all of a sudden they throw this in. It was just the icing on the cake, in other words. Could the jury look at that and say, you know what, I already knew that. We already know that the bones are Kaylee's. You don't have to superimpose those bones. We know that the duct tape was found on her face. You didn't prove anything more to us other than the fact that it could have been done with one piece of tape. But the bottom line is, it was done with three. So what did you prove there? To me, it was overkill, and I don't mean that in a punny sort of way. I think that their point was already made, so I don't think it was necessary.
Oh, okay, let's move on. It was a very big week in the trial. The prosecution moved into the science phase. I'd like to start with the cadaver dogs. Dave, I'll be honest with you. I thought it represented a lot of effort with very little payback. If anything, in my mind, it played more into the defense's hand than the state. What's your opinion?
I think that it was a necessary piece of evidence for the state. I mean, you didn't have just one dog; you had two. And you know, in any event, the trainer, you know, the dog handler, said that he smelled it in the trunk. You know, as soon as he got near the car, he smelled it. So it didn't even take a dog to do it. But a dog will hit on that. Now, could it be a false positive? Of course, it could be. But generally, dogs are accepted. And I think Cobra, you'll admit that, won't you, that dogs are an important part of finding dead bodies?
Well, yeah, and I had I worked with a canine dog that was trained by the sheriff's office, and I had it for many years, and I'm on my second dog now. The dogs are pretty damn good, but Baez missed a very important question. He should have said, what is the sex of your dog? We know one of them was a male. We don't know what the other one was, and we also don't know if that dog...
Yeah, the other one was a female.
...in the area or not, or if the second one was a female, because a lot of times my dog would get out with other bondsmen's dogs, and even when it was a sheriff's dog, and if there was another dog had been there and pissed the ground, or a female, he would go to that spot and alert like crazy. But 86 alerts in one area... I mean, I think I agree with Simon. I think it went more to the defense than it did the prosecution. I think they wasted a lot of valuable court time going over the dogs.
But do you think that the jury's going to understand that? I mean, certainly you know about dogs, okay? But the jury doesn't know other than what it's told. And if Baez doesn't jump on a golden opportunity, that's something the jury's not going to know.
Yeah, I
think
case,
that it does work for the jury.
I think they spent a lot of time on an issue, like Simon said. I think it really went to the defense, and they kind of beat the dog issue up. I mean, dogs are pretty to look at and lovely to hold and all that kind of good stuff. But the thing of it is there's a lot more stuff that could have been discussed and pushed a little harder, and I think that one went to the defense.
Yeah, actually, Jan is...
I don't agree. I don't think it went for the defense at all because it just... It went right against what Baez said.
Okay, I'm going to ask my good friend, the thinker, otherwise known as the crime doctor, Denny.
Yeah,
Denny. Here's the deal. Two dogs, two separate occasions. You bring them into the backyard, and both dogs alert in the same area, which is somewhere near the playhouse. They don't alert by the swimming pool. Now, the defense is claiming that the scenario is that George found Kaylee dead in the swimming pool and shouted at Casey. However, he didn't go into any detail about what happened next. Is it possible that if the child's body was found quickly, that there would be no decomposition in or around the swimming pool, but if the body was laid down on the ground by the playhouse and left there for an hour or two, the dogs would hit on it. What do you think, Denny?
I think, well, if you believe the accidental drowning scenario that Baez put out there, I don't happen to believe it, but if let's use that scenario. I recall his opening statement was that Casey and George were home that day, the 16th of June, I believe it was, and they realized that nobody had seen Kaylee for a while, so they went into the search mode, panicking, trying to find her. When they went outside, Casey didn't go to the pool. Apparently, George went back to the pool, because the next thing that happens is George is carrying Kaylee's wet body back around to where Casey was. There was no mention in Baez's statement that Casey was summoned back to the pool and that the girl was laying, the body had been placed on the ground and George was trying CPR or whatever. So it wasn't clear from Baez's statement, as you said, Simon, exactly what happened, other than that his claim that George came around the house to where Casey was carrying the now deceased Kaylee. So it certainly would be possible, I suppose, that after, according to Baez, they decided to enter into this conspiracy to conceal the death, and they didn't know at that exact moment what to do, how they were going to do it, they could have taken the body back around and put it on the ground, not right next to the pool, but in the area of the playhouse, and that, yes, there could have been some type of decomposition, I suppose, left in that area. But if I could, the whole dog issue, I saw it as maybe a tad in favor of the prosecution. I certainly don't think it was an overwhelming victory for the prosecution. But I was wondering, and maybe anybody could answer this, maybe Manny, strategically...
Ah, Denny, I was just about to ask you. You know,
yeah.
I know you have a question about first-degree murder.
Yeah, well, I wanted to ask that, but I also was wondering if the prosecution felt that not to call the dog or introduce the dog evidence could have been used by the defense And maybe the fact that the prosecution didn't put it on would look suspicious to the jury. They might say, well, hey, these were, you know, sheriff's deputies, sheriff's investigation. If that was important, why didn't the prosecution introduce it? So I was just wondering from a strategic standpoint. And the other question, Simon, you just mentioned,
I'll tell you what, let's get your first question answered first. Who would like to jump in? Denny, do you have a favorite victim?
I'm open to anybody. I'd like to hear everybody's opinion on that. Could it have been a strategic move? Not that it was going to accomplish that much for the prosecution, but just to get it out there and not make it appear they were trying to dodge it.
Okay, well, let's get our legal eagle on it. Manny, your thoughts.
Well, first of all, I don't think this is the pivotal piece of information for any phase of the trial. The trial's not going to be won or lost on this issue. And coming back to a more basic concept, I want to come back to something Cobra said. We all need to understand that you can convict someone of murder without a body. So if you convict somebody without a body, then you certainly can convict them when you don't know the exact cause of death. Now, one of the most harmful pieces of evidence is the evidence that goes to the issue you asked me the question about is this. There was duct tape on that child's mouth. There's no explanation for duct tape. You certainly can't say, gee whiz, the baby died, so I put duct tape over her mouth. What reason would you do that? I mean, when I listen to all these various excuses and choices, you still come back to murder. Now, you're raising questions about murder one. I don't think this can be anything other than murder one. You could possibly have murder two, which is, in other words, let's say she said, which I thought would have been a better defense, oh, the baby was crying, I couldn't stand it, I had a headache, I freaked out, I accidentally, you know, choked the child or whatever, okay? Then the question still becomes, how did the duct tape get there? So as I listen to all of you, I come back to that same question. How did the duct tape get on the mouth? So if you're dealing with that question, then it doesn't really matter what Cobra is saying about they can't give you the cause of death. There's an inference, and that inference started in 1954 in a case involving in California called People versus L. Ewing Scott, who was the first person ever to be tried without a body. The old writ of habeas corpus was suspended, and he was convicted because eventually he admitted that he buried his wife under what's called the 6th Street off-ramp of the Harbor Freeway, which is by the famous Staples Center where the Lakers play. But who was going to tear up a billion-dollar section of a freeway to find out if the body was still buried there or was originally buried there? So, you know, when they looked at it, they convicted him. Well, in this particular case, the jury is going to keep asking, how could this baby get out there if it was murdered? If they put him out there, then how do they explain the use of duct tape? And I thought one of the coroners made that very, very clear, that that's a clear incidence or evidence of someone who's died from a homicide as opposed to that. So if you conclude she died from a homicide, then the next conclusion is murder. And when they now claim that they actually was an accident, if you don't believe it's an accident, what direction do you go? You go directly to murder, right? And that's the problem in this case.
No,
I'll tell you what. Let's go out to the phone lines. I think we have a caller coming in from the 518 area code, New Jersey. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
Hi, Simon. My name is Gail and it's in New York.
Oh.
Okay, welcome.
I knew it was new something.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. I want to say two things. First of all, when those dogs were called to the Anthony home, George Anthony is the one that called them. Okay, that wasn't put up there. He is the one that called them because his yard was dug up, and he wanted to know why. So he is the one that called the sheriff's office. Second of all, I agree with Manny 100%. No reason for duct tape. None. That's all I have to say.
There's a reason for it.
No, there is no other reason. And they also found duct tape in this swamp there. All right. That could have been to use that was around the back. But that duct tape that was on a child's face, there would be no reason for it. And I agree with Dr. G, and I also agree with Manny. Thank
I got
you.
Two reasons for the caller. Simon, let me go.
Okay.
Thank you.
Here's a dealio. Upon immediate death, blowflies are within probably 3 to 5 minutes of finding your body the minute that you take your last breath. Now, there's three theories on this duct tape. Number one, that she didn't want these flies and these maggots crawling in and out of this child because she didn't know what to do with the child. She's running around, for God's sakes, with the child in the car, so flies are coming. Number two, when you die, immediately your esophagus, everything stops working. So any fluids or anything in your belly, you move that child left to right, it's dumping out, it's excreting, it's gas, it's excreting things from the bile, from the stomach, everything else. And that's two reasons that you would use duct tape if the child was already dead. Now, they said something about being post-mortem. Now, my question back to Manny would be this. If I was to shoot someone in the heart, a fatal shot, and they don't die immediately, but they're sitting there going, whoa, well, I get out the duct tape because I don't want to hear those cries of death anymore. So I duct tape her face up. Now, that's not the cause of death, the duct tape, but it is something that I've used to silence that person. So those are the three theories that I have, and the yard was dug. I don't really – everybody asks me, do you believe the child accidentally drowned? I come down on the wire on two things. One, she purposely killed that child so that Cindy would not get the child. That's probably paramount to it. Secondly, she may have overdosed the child, and the child was dying, groaning, whatever. But I really believe that she was transporting this child from here to there, and fluids were coming out of her mouth and probably out her rectum and everything else, but that was hidden by her clothes. The mouth, I believe, wrapping it around. And if you look at a piece of duct tape, which is about 2 inches wide, and you look at that compared to this child's mouth and nose and the proximity of that, there's absolutely no reason why they would put the duct tape on there except silence the screams if she was, you know, dying and moaning and everything in the personal
that's
killing.
That's still murder.
It could be. Or, secondly, that they're trying to hold these body fluids in. And I'm going to go to the body fluids, but simply because the prosecution said the manner of death was the duct tape. And there is absolutely no way that they can say that. And I'm wondering why they didn't object to all that, because there's no way you say the duct tape killed his child.
But if they had the body fluids and all that on the, I mean, was coming out, and she put that there, there would be signs of that on the duct tape.
Not sure that there aren't, because the thing of it is, duct tape degenerates itself pretty quickly out in the environment. Had we, you know, the only crust of the whole thing is, had Crunk, for whatever reason he was doing out there in August, if he would have got on with it, but that's why I kind of say, you know what, it seems to me that somebody is waiting. Now, it's not time yet. And then when you outrageously lie and say,
oh,
I kicked his skull rolled out, and we know that the skull was buried up to the eye sockets in the muck or the mire that was out there. And if you've seen this spot, like Dave's from there. Dave, this spot, this ain't something a hillbilly's going to go walking out in those bushes. I don't care how bad he has to relieve himself. That place is thick and infested with all kinds of crap. And
yeah,
thick
you know, I don't think you're – that's an interesting point, because one of the things I noticed right away, and personally I don't believe that Roy Kronk is involved in this, you know, at all. Like Baez is going to say, but you know, I mean, when I saw it, I mean, how did you find something like that? I mean, he made it sound like it was right there, way out in the open. I mean, that skull, for one thing, was dull, okay. Except for that, when they found it, it was wet from the rain, and that gave it a certain amount of sheen. But now, had he seen one of the teeth, for example, which he didn't see until it was pulled out of the dirt and leaves. That was a real bright white, but the skull itself was like a dingy light brown, so it could have blended in with the leaves.
Well, why did he lie? And secondly, I mean, it goes back to the thing about his girlfriend allegedly working in the sheriff's office. Who put him in those woods on two different occasions looking for this thing? And then why did he lie that he kicked the bag and a skull rolled out? I mean, he
understand that. You know, when it was found, with the pictures that I saw, there's no way that skull was ever picked up.
That's right, brother.
Well, maybe he said that to get him to come to his call this time. Because
before they never
did come to his call.
I don't believe it, Jan. I don't believe it. There's some kind
of...
Well, the thing is,
he was sent there those days by his, the schedule, his work. He was sent in that direction. He didn't, like, go there on his own. And I know that spot. I've been there. I've videoed there. I know a lot about that spot. And there's one giant tree that overhangs, and then you park your truck right there in the shade. And that's where he parked his truck. And that's
and
where he would have gone in.
Then you get your machete and start whacking your way out to this spot. This place is overgrown as hell.
He didn't whack anything with a machete.
I'm being facetious because it's overgrown.
I agree with you. It was overgrown. I mean, the police couldn't really see it. It is fishy, but the bottom line is the police exonerated him. And I'm going to go with the police. I'm going to go with the state attorneys here. And they're not implicating him in anything. Who would I rather believe? Who do you think I trust more, the defense and their silly notions or the state prosecutors? And the answer is very simple and clear.
Okay,
Simon.
I want to get back to Denny. Denny emailed me earlier today with a question that I could not answer. I'm not a legal eagle, but I'm pretty certain that we have at least one legal eagle on the panel. Denny, would you like to ask your question about the first-degree murder charge?
Yes, one of the shows that does recaps every night of what happens during the day in court, there was I've actually heard a couple of analysts say, well, look, even if Casey did not intend to kill Kaylee, she chloroformed her because she wanted to go out and party. She didn't have a babysitter. Or she put duct tape over her mouth to keep her quiet and had her in the trunk of the car while she was in some bar or whatever. And it wasn't intentional. That act of chloroforming the child or duct taping her mouth or whatever could be construed as aggravated child abuse. And that in the state of Florida, aggravated child abuse is a first-degree murder, okay? It qualifies for a first-degree murder charge. But then I haven't heard anybody else mention it. So is that true? Is that the way it works in Florida? Even if Casey didn't intend to kill her daughter, if she did, in fact, chloroform her just to keep her quiet or to put her to sleep, or if she put duct tape over the mouth because she was keep her quiet, would that be aggravated child abuse? And if so, does it qualify for first-degree murder?
She was charged with aggravated child abuse on top of first-degree murder.
Correct.
So
correct.
That's a separate charge. She was also charged with aggravated child neglect.
I think it's manslaughter.
And four counts of lying. I don't know. I think it's murder.
Oh, I do too.
Baez is coming up with all these, like it was a steak in the trunk. But you know what? Then Haskell comes along and says, no, those types of flies don't go after processed food. So that takes that one out of the running. Okay, so they're not the flies that were found in the bag of garbage. You know, all that adipose, the grave wax, well, that's like... That Baez suggested that could come from a state. This is ridiculous. And, of course, he's trying to convince the jury that it could possibly be something other than human decomposition. But, there's so many things that I've seen so far where the state says something, the defense tries to proffer a different, possible other scenario, and then the state comes back and with their expert witnesses they say no, that can't be the case, and here's why. So I don't think the defense has a clear cut sense of where they're going, or they would have laid out, look, it was a stake in the car, it was this, it was that, boom, and here's how we're going to prove it. Instead of trying to pick away at every new thing the state comes in with, then the defense is just strictly coming in there going, oh, well, maybe it was this instead. There's no real story that the defense is trying to tell.
Dave, I think the state, you gave a lot of credit to the state saying that Crump was, you know, cleared, and who are you going to believe, law enforcement. Here's why. I mean, I love law enforcement. They're my brothers. But I want to tell you something. When they align themselves with the Anthony family, rather than keeping them all at bay and saying, you know what, this is the biggest cover-up and everything else going on with the whole Anthony family. And I think where the prosecution really messed up is when they aligned themselves with George and Cindy and said, okay, you're on our team, and we're going after her, and that's just the way it is. I think, you know, but the reason there weren't any extra flies there, they aired the car out. They perfumed everything. She washed the jeans. When they asked for a brush, they gave her the wrong brush. Every little detail all the way down the line, this is the biggest cover-up you've ever seen in your freaking life. And also, one thing, since you're in that courtroom, take notice next time Cindy's in there. She looks like a third base coach giving her daughter signals when to cry. And I'm thinking, my God, why do they have the Anthony family in there? They're part of this cover-up. They're part of it. So,
I've been saying that.
Okay. I want to go back. I do want to go back to Denny's original question. Manny, do you know anything about, aggravated child abuse being part of the first-degree murder scenario?
Yes, let's explain it as the felony murder rule. Basically, there were originally just a group called burglary, arson, robbery, rape, and mayhem. And any crime or any death that occurs during the commission of those crimes is considered the felony murder rule, and you get the death penalty. And a typical example is arson. You see people get charged with first-degree murder and arson where someone dies who they didn't know and had no idea they would be in the building, et cetera. And there was a compelling state interest to do this. Well, I think then you had your little Lindbergh law where it said if you kidnap a child and he dies in the process of it, it's first-degree murder. But the reality is you really don't know for certain whether that was first-degree murder because you weren't there and you don't know if the child died accidentally, et cetera. So Florida, and I'm not sure that many other states have it, it's an unusual law, categorizes this as felony murder. Well, I don't believe that has been tested, overturned by the Court of Appeals. So you have to accept that the state of Florida has passed a law, and by the way, I think it's a pretty good law, that says essentially if you cause the death of a child under these circumstances, it will be considered first-degree murder. It's a deterrent for exactly this type of situation where you have an odd death like this, where the parent is responsible for that child, but nobody has a real rational explanation on how the child died. And I can't think of a more classic situation than this one. So unless that law is stricken, it's going to be applied. It's really that simple.
Denny, does that answer your question?
Yes. I thought my limited legal knowledge, I did a little research online, and I felt that that would apply here. I'm glad to hear Manny say that. And I want to tell you, I've come up with a way for Baez to introduce again, looking at strictly the reasonable doubt aspect to convince one juror. Okay, that's what I'm talking about here. The accidental drowning theory. And I think how we can do that, because it's been admitted by Baez and clearly established by the prosecution witnesses that Casey Anthony hasn't told one iota of truth since July 15, 2008, when it comes to Kaylee and what happened to Kaylee. So obviously, everybody knows she's a pathological liar. I would put her on the stand and have her admit to murdering Kaylee. Since everybody knows she doesn't tell the truth, that automatically creates reasonable doubt. So,
I like it.
What do you think, Manny? Is that a good strategy? I mean, would I make a classic defense attorney or what?
No, you'd probably get malpractice. But, You can pick whatever approach you want. That's a fun one. The only one who might have the nerve to do that is Clarence Darrow, but he's dead already, so they couldn't do anything to him.
I got a head to teeth, Danny. That's
no,
shit,
but,
Jeff.
But let's
shit.
Come back to this again. I want to come back to this basic premise. No matter what all of you say, and no matter how you go round and round about with this, you still have a child that disappeared that can't be reasonably explained to anybody the cause of death. And the cause of death is virtually impossible to be anything other than murder under these circumstances. I mean, can you explain another way this child could have got... Oh, okay, the other one is it's accidental, but she's so cold-blooded as a person, she could drive around her baby dead for a month and smile and go to parties, et cetera, while that child is out there in the old trunk of the car, you know, dead. Do you really think that a jury isn't going to roast her for that one? Oh, my God.
Bingo.
I mean, the thought of someone being able to do that is so horrendous to me, I would have her shot in the streets immediately. But that may be a greater crime than some of the other ones that she's been accused of. Am I the only one who feels that way?
No, oh, man, you got it, man. I mean, you got it.
Yeah,
hey, Simon.
I just want the prosecution to do their case. I want them to leave the lady blindfolded. You know, I used to joke about this a lot. I'd say, you know, the scales of justice is blind, but every once in a while that bitch peeks. I don't need nobody taking her blindfold off, nobody putting their finger on the scale. Go ahead and put it out there. As long as they do that, then let's go ahead. I want to be at the injection day. I want to be there. But I couldn't go there and watch her be injected if the prosecution doesn't straighten up and put this case on hard, right, and stop playing around. They're playing.
I don't think they're playing. Denny, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that in addition to, you know, I realize the actual trial is in Orlando, obviously, but this case is being tried in another court for me, and that is the crime doctor's courtroom, and where I am the judge and I am the sole juror. And what I'm doing there is I'm not obliged about the presumption of innocence in my court. And then... I'm basing my opinions on the facts as they exist today, and I've simplified it down to three very basic things. Fact one, Kaylee Anthony is dead. Fact two, Casey Anthony was the last person known to have seen her alive or had custody of Kaylee. And fact three is since this was first reported, Casey has refused and continues to refuse to offer a credible, honest explanation of what happened. So as far as I'm concerned, based on those three facts, and they're not in dispute, they exist today, she's guilty. So unless Baez can come up with something to change those facts, as far as the Griffin court goes, the crime doctor court, she's toast.
I rather like it. Actually,
you can all laugh, but that's the point I've been making all along, is there's almost a rebuttable presumption that when you're a mother and those facts that I think that he's described so clearly are coming about, then the burden falls on you to explain your conduct. And if she doesn't take the stand and explain her conduct, you can kiss her goodbye. I might also point out, too, that one of the things I don't agree with all of this is the fact that when I listen to the case, particularly what you're arguing about, I do think the prosecution has some obligation to put some of this on, because it just goes to the fact of how this child got there, the fact that there's no real evidence that supports any other theory, and it's sort of a trap. Sometimes what you do is let me describe it this way. There's two ways to win in life. One is to go out and win yourself, and the other way is let the other side lose. So by doing what they're doing, they're forcing him to take positions and defend in a way that I think makes his case look bad. So there's two aspects of this, and on that aspect, I think that the defense is doing very poorly. Some of these things, they should just shut up and let them go by, because the reality is it wouldn't have a big effect on them. But every time they start jumping into it, they do as much for the prosecution's case as the prosecution does. But, again, that's another strategy to win. So what you may see as an accident may be a group of prosecutors sitting in the office going, okay, this may not be the greatest piece of evidence, but I can't wait to see how he reacts to it. And I think that's something you're all missing.
Oh, no, I don't think we are. I was just looking at the
okay, Simon,
chat room.
Just you were missing.
There was a comment made, and it's one that you know, has been bugging me for, ever since the opening statement. You know, if it was an accident, why would you let your client rot in jail for 3 years before mentioning it? It's a classic. And the answer is, I don't have an answer.
That's the main reason I won't believe it.
Right. Now, let's talk a little bit about Casey Anthony and her acting skills in the courtroom. It seems to me that, at the very least, she has split personalities. There's the Casey that we see when the jury is present. She seems to have an adequate supply of Kleenex that never gets wet. And there's a completely different Casey that we see when the jury isn't present. Dave, have you noticed this interesting personality conflict?
Yeah, well, even the Casey that the jury does get to see, there's no doubt that that woman is wacko. I mean, she's got some real serious head problems. Maybe not legally in the state of Florida, but she is. I mean, one of the things that the defense did get across is that not just that she's a liar, but that she's made up all these people. And these people, it's almost as if they really exist in her mind. How can somebody be so creative, you know, with complex people that she's built in her mind, and then not be able to do anything with those people? Except she didn't use them to their advantage. I mean, there was never a Zenaida, for example, yet she created a whole life. But when it came right down to the bottom line, she couldn't explain anything about Zenaida other than she took her kid. Okay, all these people, the Jeff Hopkins that doesn't exist, all these people that she's imagined. And she was smart, I guess, enough to do that, but stupid enough to never convince anyone of it. You know, I don't understand her thought process. You know, if you're going to lie, do it right, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Not that that's the right thing to do, but she's just a major screw-up.
Well, wait a minute. I think you guys are missing a more serious point. Assuming for a moment she did do this crime, okay, if she did do this crime, she's clearly mentally ill. So you're trying to ascribe normal reasons to somebody who's mentally ill. And by mentally ill, I'm not saying sufficient enough to avail herself of a defense based on that, but sufficient enough to be the cause of murdering a child. Because if you're going to tell me that this occurred with somebody who could leave their child in the car that long a period of time under these circumstances and she's not mentally ill, I just am very surprised. How could she not be mentally ill?
Right. But, you know, the defense is going along with the story that she's not responsible for the car, for the girl being put in the trunk. You know, Baez left it off with George holding that dead baby. So that's what we don't know now. But still, I mean, it got inside of her car somehow. And I don't
think maybe Kaylee walked.
Well,
maybe she walked her there.
Why, you know, why would George set his daughter up? That's another thing too. If on one hand people want to believe that George is somehow involved in a cover up, then why would the defense be blaming it on George? George
okay,
is going to deny
if,
it. George
if
is
I don't
not going to be a
Jan, if I don't let Jan flap her lips at this moment, She's going to come around the table and beat me senseless.
You know, Jan, I think you have an unfair advantage here. I'm not sure what it is, but I know you have an unfair advantage.
Because I can sit and whop him when y'all can't. That's
oh, yeah. And by the way, we're all jealous.
Now, at the moment, though, the only thing I really want to say, though, is that I have a lot of mixed feelings about the deal with George and Cindy, even. At one time, you look in the courtroom and you think, okay, they're preparing for this. They're too prepared for this, as a matter of fact. And I keep going back to before the trial actually started, when Mark Lipman said in a statement that Cindy was, I think it was Mark Lipman, that Cindy was at a meeting with Baez. Okay, this is like 2 weeks before the trial started, when all this come up that they were going to blame George for everything. Why would Cindy be in a meeting, a friendly meeting, with the defense team at that time if they didn't know what was going to happen? There's part of me that can't get rid of the thought that they are all in on this, because no legal charges is going to be thrown against George now, because they can't prove the molestation, but they're putting that doubt in their mind, and they're accepting it. They've already got a ruined reputation already, so what more can hurt their reputation?
Jan, I'm going to help you out. Yes, they did know this was going down. An inside person has told me absolutely they knew it was going down, and the reason being they had two psychiatric evaluations performed on Casey. Those folks are not going to be called. And there was a meeting. They did go to them, and they did tell them this was going on, and this is how it's going to play out. And
Baez said that those guys that evaluated her found nothing wrong with her.
That's not true.
He told the judge that. I heard him telling him.
I know, but
he told the judge that they did not find anything wrong with her. I don't remember the exact words, but he told Judge Perry that whenever they were talking about it in the courtroom, because I heard him, and I said, well, that clears the thing that they can say something was wrong with her physically, I mean, her health, her mentally, because he admitted to the judge that whoever it was that was doing the evaluation on her found nothing wrong with her.
Well, here's the thing. The good book describes a lawyer as a hired liar, and there's nothing wrong with her that's going to impact the trial. However, what do you think George was trying to take his own life before? And George is going to listen. It's going to go down again because the defense has yet to put on Lee. When Lee comes on the stand, he's going to admit under oath that he has molested her, but it's going to be at a time frame when it's too late to do anything about it. And they're going to say, why did you do that? Because I saw my dad do it, my father do it, yada, yada. That's going to come out. And one of the biggest things is watch Cindy Anthony. She is taking notes. Bullshit. She's writing a book. They're all in it. Every time they show the picture of this little girl's room, why does she break down and try to sway public opinion to her side? That room has looked the exact same way it looked that day, and 3 years later it looks the same way. When she walks in the house, that room looks the same way as those pictures. Why cry? When she went to lunch that day after crying, she came back in, she tried her ever-loving damnedest to conjure up some tears and could not. I also heard from an inside source that they took everybody off their meds. They put Casey on some to calm her ass down, but mommy's off the meds right at the moment so that all her emotions are run wild and everything else. Now watch and see if some of these things don't play out. The family is in on this as part of the cover-up, and that's just the way it is, baby. You're right 100%.
Yes, 100%. That's what I'm saying. And just like the day that they found the remains, they went to that dinner at that hotel in Orlando, the whole bunch of them was out eating steak dinner. I mean, if they were that shocked about finding the baby dead, they would have never been over there partying in a hotel room, drinking whatever they were drinking.
Coming on to Dominic Casey, inside reporter says, Dominic Casey went to her private room, okay? This is what's been alleged. They went to her private room and drove her here and yonder, and she was really infatuated. They were infatuated with each other and everything else. Now, this is your granddaughter dead, and you've got these things rolling around with your private investigator guy and all this kind of happy shit going on. I'm telling you what. It's deep.
Okay, I mean, like I said,
maybe she thought he was a private investigator.
But there's some other issues that I really, really do want to get into this afternoon. I'm watching the clock tick down here. Dr. G, it seemed to me that the defense spent most of this week with their hands over their ears, tapping the ground, trying to find landmines to step on. And I think they found a great one with Dr. G. They opened the door, and she came barreling through. I mean, in no time flat, she was just wreaking pure havoc with the whole defense case. Was that your impression, Dave?
Oh, hands down. I mean, she whooped up on Chaney Mason. I don't think he saw that freight train coming.
I laughed.
Yeah, I mean, this woman is not just she's like the epitome of professionalism in her field. They just don't get any better than her. So I had the fortune of saying a few words with her afterwards too, and waiting to for the elevator to go to lunch. And she's quite a lady, I'll tell you that.
Hey, well, I want to ask you.
He had it all together.
Did you see Dr. Drew the other night? And Dr. Drew had one of the good attorneys from down here in Florida on, and he was wearing a little cowboy hat, and he was squaring off against Padilla. And did you notice they kind of asked questions, just like the defense has asked. There are people asking questions in this trial in front of this jury that matters, and they kind of circumvent it. They go around behind it. But Padilla was asked straight up, were you not the bondsman that bonded her out of jail? He didn't answer that. He went into something else. And the reason being, everybody believes that Leonard Padilla actually bonded her out of jail. And Leonard Padilla did not bond her out of jail. A very good friend of mine, Al Estes, from Big Al, bonded her out of jail. His brother, he still owes his brother $50,000 on that deal or whatever, usually 30%. But that originated out of Texas. He went to him and said, listen, this is a great opportunity for me. But everybody, and it'll go down in history, that Leonard Padilla actually bonded her out of jail. He can't. He's not a Florida bondsman. A Florida bondsman is one that could post that.
Yeah, he's a bounty hunter.
Well, he's actually out there. He can do his little thing out there in California. The laws are a little relaxed, but Florida is a whole different story. But that, I said that to say this. A lot of people perceive certain things because, the police checked him out. This was checked out. He did this. No, they didn't go down like that. And only the people that are actually licensed living in Florida know these kind of things. And, you know, actually, like you, Dave, you're in the courtroom. You know, you could say, I didn't see it that way. I saw it this way, and you were right there on the spot. I was with Richard Grun when certain things occurred, and it's like, no, that's not true. Watch and see. They're going to come back around. The emphasis is CMA. I'm going to burn their ass, baby. You're going to walk free. I'm going to get them, CMA. I won't forget my promise to you. I'm going to throw them all under the bus.
Well, I think Lee is going to throw them all under the bus.
Well, but you guys forget that Lee is a relative and that he's considered biased, and no one's going to take his testimony as seriously as it seems to be taken on this show. I mean, routinely I've heard jurors said, I thought your client had a pretty good case, but the fact is the only witnesses in his favor are family members that are not as trustworthy. So that's a big issue with jurors. No, I don't believe automatically that his testimony is going to have any material effect on anyone. I think it will get, frankly, generally scoffed at.
Second, when the defense puts on theirs, it will carry some serious weight. Right now, it's not. And it's kind of like you ever been hunting with a group of dogs? these dogs will fight each other and try to tear each other's hide off. But the minute a raccoon shows up, they're all buddies and they're all hunting. So in the beginning, the Anthonys were hell-bent on throwing this girl under the bus. So that's a damn dead body in the car. And he's saying, well, yes, all these different stories that they told, they're resenting them now. That's part and parcel why they're breaking down so hard, because now it's like, okay, we got to stick together as a family. Somebody's done a little pep talk and brought them all back around in full circle, and now they're lying like a rug, but it's all a cover-up. They've all got movie and book deals out of this shit. Don't kid yourself none. Cindy is busy trying to get her book straightened out, and hopefully, her daughter don't end up getting killed in this process. That's all they're trying to acquire now. That's it.
Okay, you mentioned the infamous Leonard Padilla.
Information from Richard.
A story that floated, actually it wasn't this week, it was last week. And Padilla apparently has received a cease and desist letter from the Anthony's lawyer, Lippman. I have no information about it. I don't know what it's about, but I did have the unfortunate accident of bumping into Nancy Grace on the TV the other day. And it doesn't seem to me that Leonard is ceasing and desisting. Dave, do you know anything about this letter?
Wait a minute now. Say something about that letter again. I missed the context of what you were saying.
Okay. Apparently, Mark Lippman has sent a cease and desist letter.
Oh, that letter, yeah, right.
Right. Do you know anything about the context or, you know, anything about it?
What I understand is that he was on Joy Behind, I don't remember her last name or how to pronounce it, but that Joy woman, okay, her show. And he was spieling off stuff about the Anthonys that I guess was supposed to be privileged or something. I don't know. I know that Mark Lippman is a good attorney and he's aggressive. He's very aggressive when it comes to representing the Anthonys. You know, I mean he's done more for them, I think, than anyone else. And he, you know, he's really a real estate attorney with what do you call it when people lose their houses? What do you call that?
Foreclosure
attorney. You know, I'm sure they have them out in California, but I've spoken to him you know, on a number of occasions, and he's a pretty sharp, straight shooting guy. So I think it's because Leonard Padilla won't keep his mouth shut.
And he doesn't have to. Basically, that's a paper tiger letter, like some of us received right there, Jan. It's a paper tiger deal. They want to try to shut up folks. But the thing of it was, if they really wanted this girl protected from Padilla, say, they would have signed a bond. He would have been in direct privy with her. But, however, everything was done at his expense, regardless of who bonded her out or whatever. Every bodyguarding, everything else was done at his expense. He was his own employer at the time. And anything that he found out, heard, overheard, he was in direct privy to, and he has absolutely no reason through any letter or anything else to cease and desist on anything, unless he would have been taken into attorney-client privilege type of thing, and he had direct privy to the family. He did not. He bonded her. He was strictly, from the beginning of this, the only reason that he bonded her out was hopefully that she would lead him to find out where the child was or whatever. So that's another frickin' paper tiger. I mean, ask Manny. I mean, there's no way you can shut somebody up on information they saw. You can't tell somebody what they heard, what they saw, and if they heard it and he was allowed to be in there, then, oh, well, it comes out and there it is.
Yeah, the key word.
Okay, I'll tell you what, folks. We're going to cruise out to the switchboard, take a huge chance here. We have a caller on the line from the unlikely 111 area code. Caller, what's your name and what's your question for us?
Hello?
Hello?
Are you talking to me? From Idaho?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. Well, in any case, I'm like Jan. I can't sit and listen to it anymore. I got to jump in there. I just disagree with Cobra for one reason, and that is that Mallory and Lee are having their own baby. And I think this family's going to fall in step. They don't want that baby to be inaccessible to them. I really don't think Lee's going to fall on any sword or admit to anything. He's getting ready to have his own baby, and I think he's going to serve his own life and with that baby. And I think that's the reason why the Anthonys are falling in step now. What does everyone else think?
Crazy guys to allow this child to be raised up by those Anthonys. Crazy. Totally insane.
I don't think Lee is going to say that he molested Casey. I really don't think. I think he's going to say his father did.
What?
I think he's going to say that his sister told him that. But yet, even though everybody else says it, I mean, just like Tony Lazzaro said, that she didn't tell him that her daddy did. She told him that Lee attempted to. And they claim that he didn't succeed, but he tried. And so I don't. But I do believe that Lee is going to do whatever he can to try to get his sister off of this.
Well, let me ask a question. Now, let me ask a question, Jan, of everybody. Assuming for a moment there was some type of sexual abuse, what difference is it going to make in the outcome of the case?
Well, that's right.
Right.
It shouldn't. Shouldn't make any at all. But that's what they're going to try to use. They're going to try to say that, and that why that's the reason that with George. They're going to say that he did everything, and Casey's innocent. But even if that was the case, how could she be innocent if she let him dispose of her daughter's body?
Well, that's
and not
my
say
point.
Anything.
My point is, no matter how you twist and turn this event, it doesn't turn itself into any kind of reasonable explanation for what occurred. And what's more, I think it's just going to be laughable when it hits the stand. I mean, you know, you can say anything you want on the witness stand, but it has to bear some credibility, and I don't see any credibility.
You're right, Manny. I agree with you. What's the point of all that?
There is another question in the chat room for the caller. How do you know for sure that Lee's girlfriend, Mallory, is pregnant?
Uh-oh.
Dave, you were in court.
And that it's Lee's baby.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't know. I mean, she's not 7 months pregnant. I can guarantee that.
She shouldn't look pregnant to me, but
well,
I
no,
don't
she
know.
Didn't. But you know, she's kind of a little bit heavy. So, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way at all. She's just like maybe big boned or a little bigger on the plus size. Yeah,
she was even like that. Whenever they went on their cruise, she had a little belly on her. But that was a long time ago.
I mean, I haven't heard anything anywhere solid. I've heard rumors, but I don't know. So I'm the last person that should be talking about that, other than I say, yeah, she's sat next to me before, but you know, she is a little bit on the heavier side. So I'm not a good person to judge whether a woman's pregnant or not.
Davey, as much as this family sleeps around, you know, and all the allegations and everything, if she is pregnant, the first damn thing I throw is, how do we know it's Lee's kid?
Look, I had a woman ask me one time if the dress she was wearing made her look fat, and I said, no, it's all the cake and ice cream you eat that makes you look fat, and that's the last time I ever saw her.
I guess so.
I can't imagine why.
Well,
I have to think about that one.
If she was pregnant all this time, that she'd have done had that baby by now, and she would have definitely. If she was pregnant when they went on that cruise, she would have definitely either had the baby or she. You could see simple that it would be plain as day that she was pregnant.
Well, Casey, they didn't know that Casey was pregnant until what 8 months into the deal.
Yeah. But she was supposed to be small, remember?
Yeah.
So, but,
you know,
I mean, seriously, when was the cruise? I forgot when.
You have to be deaf, dumb, blind, and stupid. stupid not to tell someone's pregnant that you know. It's one thing to bump into a woman on the street that you don't know and not know whether she's pregnant or not. But when you know somebody, if you can't tell the changes in them, you know, it's just hard for me to accept.
There you go, Matt.
Jan, don't you feel the same way? Could you
imagine? Well, I know everybody could tell I was pregnant because I swelled up like a balloon. But I do know people that have had babies and nobody knew they were pregnant, though. I mean, it's sad, but it is possible.
Well,
that's
not my point. My point is, among the people that you know well, right?
Yes, you're right. Yeah, because it's very obvious the changes in your moods, for one thing. I mean
it's everything.
It's a lot of different changes.
There's only two possibilities, pregnant or PMS.
Bloated.
Just remember, the show goes on when we get off the air.
I think
it'll be grounds for another beating as soon as I wrap the show up.
Is Lee guilty of molesting Mallory? That's what people want to know.
Well, they said that he tried, but he didn't succeed. But no, I don't think he did.
Jan.
Wait a minute.
He said Mallory.
Right. Wait a minute. I want to understand this as a lawyer and as a human being. How do you try to molest a young girl or someone and
right.
not succeed? First
right.
of all, the very act of trying is a crime in itself. So
right.
So she tried. Then the minute he tried, she succeeded, if you know what I mean.
Exactly.
Okay, if you think back whenever Tony Lazzaro was on the stand and Baez was questioning him and he wanted to know the secret...
Yes.
That Casey told him, and he said that it was that Lee also tried to follow in her daddy's footsteps, his daddy's footsteps. Okay, but I don't think it was the answers that Baez was looking for. I think he wanted him to say that she told him that her daddy had also done it.
But he didn't say that.
He said her daddy was abusive towards her, not sexually abusive.
Yeah, it'll come out. But I still like Denny's approach. Put her on the stand and ask her about the murder. And then she says, that did it. Ah, shit. She's off. She's lying again. She didn't do it.
Okay. We are getting preciously close to the end of the broadcast.
I'm sorry. I'm going on.
No, but there is another area that I do want to touch on. And, Manny, I'm going to put you on the spot. You've had lots of courtroom experience. It is possible to overplay a hand. Doesn't matter if you're prosecution or defense. There has to be a time where you walk away before opening doors you don't want opened. And but there was a quote I got from Bill Schaefer earlier this week, and it cracked me up. He was talking about Chaney Mason and the disaster that he created with Dr. G. And his quote was, "If he has any sense, he'll sit down and shut up."
I like that. I agree with that. I could have told him that about Dr. G from the beginning. My wife, who you know is prodigious of researcher and interested in those areas, loves Dr. G. I personally hate it when she puts it on late at night in bed, wants to watch a little autopsy before you go to sleep. So I see her on my TV more than any human being probably would like to. And I think she, along with Michael Badner, by far the premier people in her profession. And when she speaks, people listen. So when you have a witness like that, the rule is to get them out of there as fast as you can. Get them off that stand. Try to hope nobody remembers what they say. And above all, don't let them punctuate their point. And I thought he did that terribly. He should have just left her alone and said, she doesn't exist, I don't know who she is, I'm not going to ask her a question. That's a big mistake.
Okay, we're going to be losing our live listeners in about 25 seconds. But
does that mean all our listeners will be dead?
We will continue on with the show, and everything is being recorded for posterity's sake. Okay, Denny,
yes.
you've been quiet for a while. And that usually means you've been, contemplating all sorts of awkward questions.
Well, actually, I've got to say that I agree with Manny regarding Lee's testimony. If Lee or comes on and says what Cobra hinted at, that he molested Casey, and he got the idea, he saw Daddy do it and all that. First of all, I think his testimony would be questionable. He has an agenda here. And secondly, so what? In the great scheme of things, whether or not Casey was sexually abused or molested, does that mean she didn't kill Kaylee? And I don't think that necessarily means that. At least it doesn't to me. Maybe in a penalty phase or whatever, that might have some bearing if they want to try it. But I think in the guilt phase, that does not mean to me that Casey was incapable of murdering her daughter. Cobra said a while ago where he thought the prosecution may have overextended. In my opinion, and this is something Manny said a couple of shows ago, I think that when Baez in his opening very explicitly mentioned that this sexual abuse issue and the Kronk issue and all that, and for me, he shifted the burden of proof. I realize he has no legal requirement to prove any of this stuff, but I think the public and more importantly the jurors now expect some type of evidence to back up what he said, and the failure to produce that credibly, I'm talking credible evidence, I think is going to come back to bite him.
I couldn't agree more with you. I think
Thank
it was
you.
A terrible mistake.
My, oh, my. It's probably time for us to wrap this up before my producer starts seriously whining. So,
usually I can hear him all the way in Los Angeles.
I'm going to go once around the table. Dave, what is next in store? Are the prosecution going to wrap up their case this coming week?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, there were some minor setbacks, and I don't mean that in the States, direction or anything. I mean, Casey left early one day. I don't know. I think they'll probably finish it up. I think the next in line will probably be the plant stuff, botanists, because that seems to follow suit after the bug doctors, the bug doctors. Who, by the way, I did shake at the end of I guess we were taking a break, and I did get to stop briefly to say hello to Dr. Haskell. And I'll tell you one thing, I wanted to shake his hand because every time I've ever met a farmer, and Ashton said, I understand you used to be a farmer, and he said, yes, cattle and horses. And when I shook that man's hand, let me tell you, he's got one heck of a handshake. And of course, very firm grip, and I do too. So, every time I've ever shaken the hand of a farmer, it's always a very firm handshake. And he's just a really all-around good guy.
Let's go to Cobra. Cobra, your parting thoughts, and what do you think the prosecution's going to wrap up this week?
I don't know, but I think one of the big questions I would have to ask, George and Cindy went by this car every day for several weeks while it sat there out of gas. But who told them it was out of gas? Hence, why did they show up with two full gas cans of gas to put in the car? So there's a whole bunch of little things that are not popped out yet. And the greatest day I'm waiting for is rebuttal witnesses to pop in. And when the rebuttal witnesses pop in, I think the whole case is going to flip upside down. And this week, as far as the prosecution, I don't know. I'll let you know better next week, because I believe that the trial is going to go 8 to 12 or 10 to 12 weeks instead of the 6 weeks. I think it's going to overrun itself just slightly, possibly double.
Yeah, I have to admit I agree with you. Denny.
Yeah.
Your parting thoughts. You think the prosecution can wrap up this week?
I think they possibly can, or they'll be pretty close to it. And quite frankly, I'm anxious from the entertainment value. not that they're necessarily going to convince me, but I think the defense case is going to be very entertaining. I think that there's going to be a lot of this stuff, throwing all the stuff up against the wall, you know, if Cobra's right, the Lee Anthony stuff. And I need to ask Cobra a question before we quit here. Cobra, do you think now that the defense strategy is such that the Grund family and so forth is off the hook here? Do you think they still might come into play, or do you think the defense has their agenda and the scenario they're going to push, and that the Grunds and other innocent people may be not be victimized?
Well, it's going to be brutal if they do. If the defense brings Richard Grund or Jesse Grund to the stand, the girl is going to end up with an injection in her arm for the simple reason that's one man, met him personally, I know him well, that's one person that the only reason he should be brought in is to refute something that's been said. But if the defense tries to lay Richard Grund out, this whole damn thing is going to flip.
Is he on the witness list?
He's on the, as a rebuttal witness. He's not going to be called at this moment. However, if tell you, Brady bar the doors, hell hath no fury. It's coming down. So that's a bad.
I really, really do need to rush this along. I'm now being seriously whined at.
Not by me.
Not by Jan. Manny, do you think the prosecution's going to wrap up this coming week? And your parting thoughts for the day?
I think they're going to wrap up pretty soon because, first of all, they want to force the defense to put a case on. Remember, they can put on rebuttal to anything that comes up. And, of course, if the defense puts up no case, then they don't have to do anything. I wonder what defense they're going to put up. I wouldn't be surprised if you hear little or nothing from them. Yes, the general feeling is they've got to do this, they've got to do that, but that doesn't mean they're going to do anything. So I'm waiting to see what, if anything, they actually do. So don't be surprised if they don't put on a bare-bones defense, if at all, and say, well, the prosecution failed to prove their case, so we don't need to. That usually means I don't have a case. I'm crossing my fingers, and I hope I'm going to get out of this alive. And that's what I think is going to happen.
You don't think they're going to bring in their forensic specialist?
Best believe it.
Yes, I think you're going to have a minimum of testimony, but I don't think you're going to have all this other kind of testimony that everybody's speculating about, because if it hasn't become clear to them already, it should be clear to them by now that it isn't going to be highly productive. So why would you want to continue to ask questions that you already know instinctively are not going to be productive?
Okay, and Jan, your parting thoughts.
Well, as usual, I just want to follow this to hurry up and end and get some justice for little Kaylee.
Yeah, actually, the sooner this trial ends, the sooner life returns to normal.
In our home, for sure.
Right? I mean, I'm fed up with...
Badly.
Yeah, I'm fed up with the wall-to-wall video and audio coverage. Yeah, I get up in the morning, and it's on. I go to bed at night, It's Cidilon.
You got to turn on Dr. G late at night for Simon before he goes to bed.
Oh, hell no.
Oh, that, I'll be the next case that she features, you know?
I like Dr. G.
Just turn on Nancy Grace. That'll get Simon. Just turn Nancy on. Well, bombshell!
Okay. Folks, I do need to wrap this up. I want to thank you all for taking part today. And I do hope that you'll be back with us again next Sunday. I'm sure we'll have lots and lots to talk about again. Until then, this is Simon and Jen Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy and safe week. Till next Sunday. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, y'all, for being here. Bye-bye.
See you, Minnie.